ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, before we start, I have a favour to ask. If you love Ladies We Need to Talk, please follow the show on your podcast app of choice. And I'm guessing you might already, in which case, could you please post a comment or write a review sharing your love and appreciation of your favourite podcast, because it really does help other women to find us. And I know that there's more podcasts than ever out there right now, so we are so stoked and grateful that you choose Ladies We Need to Talk.
I was in a mad rush to get out the door, and I was like, what is the quickest, cleanest, and easiest way to do this?
Naz Campanella's well-organised baby change table is just a bit too far away on this busy morning when her son, Lachlan, needs an urgent nappy change.
And so, like, I just stood him up and just, like, put him on the bath mat, changed him, and then all of a sudden forgot where I'd put the nappy, went to go find it, and just put my knee in it, and the Calazan Patty suit was no longer fit for TV. I think it might have been my, like, powder blue suit.
Of course.
You couldn't clean it, mate. It was just like, I got to get changed, and now we're going to be so late for work and daycare.
Of all the things Naz imagined when she was planning her family, kneeling in shit probably wasn't in there. Naz is the disability affairs reporter for the ABC, but you might remember her voice from when she was the fairly legendary Triple J newsreader and reporter. In 2022, Naz took a break from the mic when she had her son Lachlan, but she's since returned to work and regularly juggles soiled nappies and power dressing for TV spots. Naz is vision impaired and lives with a neurological condition that affects her dexterity and balance, which can make sudden changes, like an unexpected loaded nappy, a significant challenge. But the thing that you really need to know about Naz Campanella is she loves a challenge. For much of her life, people have told Naz what she can and can't do, but she's all about proving that she'll do it her way. I'm Yumi Steins. Ladies, we need to talk about giving the middle finger to expectations with Naz Campanella.
I've never really cared what people think, and if I want something, I'll do it anyway.
Naz has always been staunchly herself, but sometimes the unsolicited advice from strangers can be breathtaking in its audacity.
I was pretty gobsmacked when someone at the bus stop was admiring my engagement ring and then proceeded to tell me, oh, well, you're probably not going to have kids though, right?
Wow.
And while I was gobsmacked, I was also not surprised, because we often as a disabled community have people say things like that to us. Mm. I had people from way back, even before I was thinking about having kids, tell me that I probably shouldn't.
How did you respond to that woman at the bus stop?
I think I just said to her, actually, we are thinking of having kids, and that's a really personal thing to say to someone. And that is generally my response.
Okay.
When people say things like, how did you lose your vision, or have you tried XYZ treatment? You know, like, I'm used to it. It's unfortunate, but I really am. And I could get angry about it. I could get frustrated. The reality is it's not going to help the situation, and it doesn't help me at the time. I think what's cool is just trying to teach people about why that sort of language or why that sort of belief system is really wrong and uncomfortable. And yeah, you make them feel uncomfortable actually by putting them in their place.
And there was a time when Naz herself didn't think kids would be in her future.
I guess it's my own internal ableism. I just didn't think I would meet anyone that would want to have kids with me. I think because I did have people who would say things to me like, you know, your conditions are hereditary, and ask whether they were, and, you know, but wouldn't you be afraid to pass those things on?
In spite of her spunk, Naz unsurprisingly started to internalise some of this ableism.
You don't care what people think, but you do take part of it on board, and you start to tell yourself that maybe it isn't an option until you meet someone that you know it's totally something the both of you want and that you can absolutely do together.
That someone for Naz is her husband, Tom.
We met at the ABC.
It's where all the hotties congregate, right?
Well, where else do you meet people when you spend so much time at work?
At work, yeah.
So he was a regional reporter in Bega on the New South Wales far south coast.
Naz also found herself in Bega for her first regional ABC posting, and she didn't know anyone there.
And I got down there and we hit it off. We just became friends instantly and spent a lot of time together. You know, he trained me up in the job. On the weekends, he'd sort of drive me around the region, introducing me to people, showing me all the good cafes, the good eateries, good farmers markets, the best beaches to swim at. And it kind of never stopped.
During these exploration tours, Naz and Tom developed feelings for each other.
I think it was pretty quick for the two of us. And I think probably when we went out for a seafood platter at the Tathra pub.
And the specificity of that delights me.
That was the 23rd of February. We went out for this seafood platter. I paid for it because I'm an independent woman who will not let a man pay for my food straight away. He had to know who was going to wear the pants in the relationship, you know. He reminds me on the 23rd of every month that we went out for a seafood platter and I paid and we've been together ever since.
Right from the start, whether he was taking her to explore some unknown neighbourhood or just hanging at home, Tom knew how to make Naz feel safe and considered.
I think he is empathetic anyway, and he is so in tune with people's thoughts and feelings and knowing how to kind of read their body language. He knew that when he was leaving my house to turn off all the lights, otherwise they'd be on and my electricity bill would be really high and I'd make him pay for the bill. He knew that he had to put the remotes or the, you know, whatever it was, the keys in the same spot. But that's just who he is. So I don't know, we're just the kind of the perfect match, I guess.
Naz and Tom did a year of long distance before she moved back to Sydney to work at Triple J. They had one of those big weddings in 2018 and, like many newlyweds, started to think about babies.
I knew that my husband and I were going to give this little person an incredible life together and that we'd do everything the way we always did, like together, and we'd divide and conquer the jobs and we would figure out what was going to be tricky and figure out a way around it.
There was no doubt there was going to be a learning curve, but Naz had a big support network of family to call on. Plus, her friends were also in the phase of making and popping out babies, which gave her a big insight into what challenges lay ahead.
And so I could prepare for a lot of them and find the right bits of technology and the right kind of workarounds to those things. You know, I had to think about, not only am I blind, but I've also got a neurological condition. It affects the way I sort of mobilize around the house. My balance is not great and my muscles are very weak. And so I had to do a lot of exercise physiology sessions, like literally weightlifting, to make sure that I would be able to get up off the couch while holding a baby with both hands and not using a hand to help myself get up.
When Lachlan arrived, along with the new mum, Joy, came the new mum worries for Naz.
What if he isn't breathing one time in his sleep, or how will I know? And I just learned to rely on what I do have, which is hearing and feels. Because one of the perks of being blind is you don't need to go and turn all the lights on to check on your baby. So I would always be the one that went in the dark and just quickly put two fingers on his chest to make sure it was rising and falling, make sure that the zipper on his sleep suit was facing up so I knew that he hadn't turned over. And I learned to listen to him. Was his breathing the way that it normally was? Was his cough the way it normally was? Just relying on the senses that I did have.
And those parenting spidey senses were highly attuned. And one night, Naz woke up to the sound of a barking cough coming from Lockie's nursery.
And I instantly swung into action. Like, I just told my husband to go and get the car. And by the time he brought the car around to pop us in the car, I was holding our son up in, you know, one arm, and I was singing to him to calm him down so he could stop sort of having this terrible cough. And I'd also grabbed his blue book and packed a bag so we could head off to the hospital. And I remember afterwards thinking, I actually don't know how I knew to do all of that and how I could do all of that with, like, in a split second with, you know, two hands, and how I did it really calmly. And that's when I knew that I am a good mum and I know what to do because it's just instinct.
Sure. I feel a bit emotional picturing all that happening and even remembering the blue book.
I know, how weird.
No, it was fantastic.
The but, bottles, the nappies.
Yeah, but you booked. Did all that because you could hear the sound of his coughing and went, oh, no, that's not good.
I rely on my hearing a lot. So the moment he's quiet, I'm like, I think any parent, like, what's going on? But if I can hear him, then it's okay. I can't have eyes on him. But, you know, I was making lunch in the kitchen the other day and he was in the backyard and I could hear that he was just running his trains up and down the concrete. So, you know, I knew he was safe.
Naz relies on other senses, including touch. So, for instance, when Lockie was a toddler, she would dress him in textured outfits so that when he was running around with other kids, she could tell which of the kids was her own.
You know, we'd go out to an indoor play gym or a trampolining park or something. And so I'd put like textured overalls on him so I knew that I wasn't picking up the wrong baby. I mean, I still did pick up the wrong baby sometimes and have to like apologise to the parent. And it all became...
Have you really done that?
Yeah, I've absolutely done that and had to apologise. And everyone thankfully saw that I was the mum who walked in with the cane and it was all fine and we had a bit of a laugh about it. But yeah, textured outfits. I initially put like squeaky shoes on him as well, but he would pull them off.
Yeah,
and
fair.
Figured out pretty quickly that was just not something he wanted to wear.
It's likely that baby Lockie gets his sense of style from his mum. On the day Naz comes into the studio, she's looking immaculate in a burgundy dress with a matching blazer. And I feel a bit crumpled in comparison.
I think when people think you're blind, you actually don't care about how you look. And I really, really do. And I care about how my son is dressed. And so even pedantic things like the washing, if I know that I've just done a load of washing and he's worn a particular shirt, I will put those clothes on the bottom of the pile in the drawer so that things that we've recently worn don't get worn straight away.
Naz loves visual self-expression and she's applied a similar creative flair to challenges like reading to your child at bedtime.
Reading is a bit of an effort. I have a lack of sensitivity in my fingertips because of my neurological condition. So Braille is not an option. Early on, I used to get friends to record audiobooks or I used to buy audiobooks. I would have the printed version in front of my son and I. I would listen to the book through a little earpiece and I would read to him and friends would describe the pictures so I could describe them to him. Mm-hmm. They'd tell me when to turn the pages. So it was great in the beginning, but then it became an effort because he was noticing the mobile phone because it was always on my phone.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want screen time to be a thing. But also then it just became an effort to pull everything out, like the book, the headphones, the phone, like to set it all up. Sometimes you just want to pull a book out and read it. So instead, we would just play music or I would sing to him. And even now, we still sing a lot.
Something that affects pretty much all new mothers is the challenge of leaving the house. Sure, it sounds straightforward, but when you're in it, it's really not.
I have always been an incredibly independent person who has never stayed home. And it was one thing that I underestimated when it came to motherhood. How would I get out of the house? I knew that I wouldn't be able to do it on my own. Pushing a pram is not an option. How can you do that when you have a cane as well? Mm. So we hired a doula who would come out to things like sensory play classes from 3 months, swimming from 4 months, and music classes from 5 months. And she's just become part of the family. Like she stuck with us for 2 years as a doula, which was way beyond what a doula's, remit is. But now she's just a friend and she just pops over and, you know, we have afternoon tea together. But what I loved is that I had this kind of wealth of knowledge, but also a key to getting us out of the house together.
Naz, what are your strongest memories of those early days and months with your little son?
I remember thinking, I'm probably going to miss all these particular milestones, like the smile and the roll, because I won't see them. But I remember we were just playing on his little playmat and I was lying next to him and we were just lying there and I just felt him, like I heard him flip and I could feel him flipping. And I thought if I wasn't in this moment lying next to him and just enjoying time together, I totally would have missed that.
And there were other firsts that Naz got to enjoy.
I remember the first time he said, "Mum," we were in the car and we were just sitting there and I was singing to him. We sing a lot and I just stopped and then he just said, "Mama," and it was just really beautiful.
And since those first words, Lockie hasn't given Naz and Tom a moment of peace. But that is by design.
Singing is a big thing. Voice is a big thing. We talk all the time. Like, our house is never quiet. We are either singing, dancing, or I'm telling him stories, and we talk constantly. And that's because that's my main form of communication. He knows that he has to be verbal. He cannot nod his head to say yes or no. So as a consequence, he is probably the loudest kid most people meet. He knows that he has to take my hand to put it on things if he wants to show me things. He knows that he cannot leave his toys in the middle of where I'm going to walk.
But Lockie is still a kid, and that means sometimes the toys don't make it back into the box when they're supposed to.
The other night I said to him, Lockie, have you packed up your train set? And he was in the other room, said, yeah, Mum, I've packed away my toys. And then I went to walk and instantly tripped over and he came running out and was saying, Mummy, sorry, I didn't actually pack it away. And I had to say to him, you're not in trouble, because it's not his fault, right? Like, he's a kid. He's allowed to lie and leave his things lying around. But I had to say to him, you just have to remember that when I ask you whether you've packed your toys away and you say that you have, I'm going to believe that you have, and now I've hurt my toe. And so instantly it was like, I'll get you a Band-Aid. And then he does really funny things like tell me he's finished his breakfast and then I'll go and slip on a piece of Vegemite toast. Or he has been known to also, like, I'll be going to find him and he'll just stand in the corner really quietly and smile. And my husband will have to say, don't, that's really mean. Don't play jokes like that on Mommy. But what I also love is that he knows when we are out and about, he has to tell me where he is. So if I say, Lockie, where are you? He says, Mum, I'm over here.
Yeah, great. And does he introduce you to people or?
Yeah, he does. At daycare a few weeks ago, I went a bit early so I could just sit in and have a play. And I was sitting and instantly what I love is a bunch of kids just come up and they, you know, do what they do with any other mum. They throw books at me, ask me to read things to them, ask me to put on their jackets or whatever. And my son got my hand and he took my little finger and he pointed to every kid that was sitting around me and told me their names and who they were. Oh. And I don't know many three-year-olds that would have the patience to do that, but he does. And it's because he knows that that's the way I work and that's how I process information. I think he kind of loves that he gets to do that as well.
Do you think there's an extra strong connection between the two of you because you have to be in tune with one another?
I do. Yeah, I really do. I think he knows how to read me and I know how to read him. And it's, for me, it's not on facial expressions. It's his mood, it's his voice, it's the way he's playing with toys. And for him, he can read my facial expressions, but he can also see if I'm struggling to find something. And I know that sometimes when I do trip over or fall down the stairs or something or whatever, it doesn't happen all the time, but when it does, he will come running and instantly say, are you okay? What happened? And I just am confident I am raising someone who will just be in tune with the way people think and feel and hopefully respond to that. And I think it's really special that I'm raising a young boy to be like that.
With or without a disability, raising a child has many challenges. And remember, Naz loves a challenge, but she's always fallen back on how much she loves teaching and being creative, and Lockie has been the beneficiary of all that love.
I've always loved children. I didn't think I'd have children, but from the moment I met my husband, I knew I wanted to be a mum, and I knew I would be an okay mum because I love reading and I love, you know, singing and playing and teaching people about the world. I love when he asks me questions. I love actually talking to him about things, even the most complicated things. But I didn't realize how obsessed you would become with your kids. And he literally is the love of my life. You know, friends invite me out to their 40th or their whatever they've got going on. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'll see if I can get there. I would much rather be at home building trains and just having a cup of tea and just listening to him play.
Parenting has been a happy adjustment for Naz and Tom, while being a different kind of adjustment for others.
This was particularly early on when we bought our baby home. We'd be out at a cafe and people would sort of chat to us and all those sorts of things. Mm. And it was all fine and dandy. And then when I'd stand up and have baby in one arm, cane in the other, my husband would say that people's mouths just dropped. Like, oh, wow, she's the mum. And, you know, I love that people are shocked by it. I wish they weren't, but the reality is they are. And that's fine. I love kind of busting myths.
Yep. I've loved talking to you today, Naz. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's really interesting and really joyful.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Gundungurra, Gadigal and Muwinina peoples. Ladies We Need to Talk is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt, produced by Elsa Silberstein and Sarah Mashman. Supervising producer is Tamar Cranswick, and our executive producer is Alex Lolbach. This series was created by Claudine Ryan.